Markets fret over the shutdown and debt ceiling.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Let's begin with how Washington's troubles are playing on Wall Street. David Kelly is chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So the shutdown continues. Beyond that, we have the greater worry about the debt ceiling. What are markets thinking about all this?
Well, of course, the biggest problem is uncertainty. Markets hate uncertainty. And so as this shutdown continues, we don't really know when this is going to come to an end. I think that uncertainty will weigh on markets. And of course, as we get to the debt ceiling issue, that could be it could get a good deal worse in the short run.
And let's get away from D.C. for a moment. What are you seeing going on globally that intrigues you?
Well, globally, the global economy is getting better. In fact, the U.S. economy was getting better, too. It's very frustrating that we are at a time where the Chinese economy, the Japanese economy, the European economy, the U.S. economy are all growing at the same time. So there really is a hope for stronger economic growth, and it's tremendously frustrating that the biggest obstacle right now to stronger U.S. growth is what's happening in Washington.
And give a sense, just speaking of politics, of the vote that Italy's government was able to survive, a challenge from Silvio Berlusconi. Query quickly, how significant was that?
I think it's quite significant. I think it's very good for Italy, but it also suggests that Europe is getting beyond some of its tail risks here. I think Europe realizes that we may see a little less austerity, but I think the European public is beginning to get around the idea that they've just got to support these centrist governments to try and get their economies growing again, rather than the lure of the extremists, which was much bigger a year or two ago.
Okay, David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Thanks very much.
Anytime.
We talk a lot about the debt ceiling. We just did, and that is the $16.7 trillion limit, about how much the government, U.S. government can borrow. Right now, we want to take a closer look at who we exactly owe that money to. It's not who you might think. Marketplace's Patty Hirsch joins us to talk about this. He is the creator and host of our online explainer series, The Whiteboard. Hello, Patty.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Now, we often talk about the national debt like it's monopoly money or something, but every one of those trillions is owed to someone somewhere, and America pays them interest. So China owns a lot of American debt and tends to get a lot of attention for it because some people find that very scary. But you point out that America owes an awful lot of money to sources much closer to home. Explain that.
Right. Yeah. So America owes most of its money, $10 trillion of that $16.5 trillion that we owe, to Americans. And that means large institutions, individual investors, but it also means government programs, particularly Social Security, which is a big buyer of U.S. bonds.
Those are the kind of the government entities. But talk about just the chunk of the national debt that regular Americans indirectly actually own.
Yeah, so nearly $5 trillion, right, is actually lent by individual Americans. So people through their 401ks or even through their individual retirement accounts, you know, they're actually buying U.S. bonds, which is actually lending money to the U.S. government. So in actual fact, we are lending money to ourselves and we're actually borrowing money from ourselves.
Now, that brings us back to the issue of raising the debt ceiling. If we don't raise it, if America defaults on its debt, what happens to all the people that it owes money to?
A lot of people say, oh, if we don't raise the debt ceiling, what it means is we're not going to be able to pay our bills. What it really means is we won't be able to pay the interest on the money that we already owe. So it means that individual Americans may not get an interest payment on the 5-year or the 30-year bond that they've actually bought from the U.S. government.
Patty, let me see if you can just trace this from all of the large trillions into, you know, jobs and what affects people's everyday life.
Well, remember, any bond that the government has sold, in other words, any loan that it makes, has to be paid back. Now, usually we pay lenders back with more debt, but if we default, the cost of borrowing would be way, way higher, you know, which means we couldn't afford to borrow anymore, which means we'd have to spend a lot less. And that means we'd have to shrink government to a really, really small size. Of course, what that means is layoffs. We'd be laying off millions of people who are employed by the government right now. That would send unemployment through the roof, and then we'd risk a really serious depression.
Patty Hirsch, thank you for the appropriately grim summary of what's at stake in the debt ceiling debate.
Always a pleasure to be grim, Mark. Thank you.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
The social network LinkedIn is mostly white-collar, so a new service called WorkHands sees an opportunity. It's a network for skilled trade workers like welders and plumbers, Marketplace's Noel King reports.
Randall Wickes is an electrician and a welder. Oh, he fixes cars, too, and installs appliances, but he finds it tough to advertise his services.
I don't advertise in the newspaper because actually that's a dying form right now.
And he feels like LinkedIn works for a different crowd.
If you're a white-collar guy, there's plenty of places for you to look for a job, lots of different headhunters, etc., but not that I've noticed for the blue-collar industry.
Same thing occurred to James Dunbar. He works in tech in Silicon Valley, but he and his WorkHands co-creator are from blue-collar families. They design the network for people who work with their hands.
You can upload images of projects that you've worked on in the past. You can upload licenses and certifications that you've earned and list out the tools that you either own or know how to use.
WorkHands went live a few weeks ago, and Randall Wickes hasn't landed any work yet, but he says he has referred a lot of his blue-collar buddies to the site. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
And finally, jellyfish have their say in the energy debate. One of the world's largest nuclear reactors is shut down after tons of jellyfish clogged the water pipes at the Swedish power plant. We don't know for sure the position of these jellyfish on nuclear power, but plants around the world say this problem is coming up more and more. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.